Growing up in Western Massachusetts, I did not know a soul who had had a nose job, or at least I didn't think I did. I knew that Brenda Potemkin in Goodbye Columbus had had one, but I knew that the way that I knew that there were like dukes and duchesses in England, and that didn't make any of it any realer to me. I think the first nose job I knew about was in high school when a girl a year behind me came back from summer vacation with a new nose. And it was like very new. It had been, you know, normal to plus sized, and then it had been shrunken substantially. But even so, she was a billionaire, like literally a billionaire. I mean, her father was someone who is written up in books about corporate raiders of the 80s. Like he's famous for being a billionaire. So the rules again, it was like, well, okay, billionaires' daughters get nose jobs. Then in college, that was the first time I really knew people who seemed like normal human beings who had had plastic surgery. And it was an Asian American woman whose mother had made her have her eyes done, like made to look more more Western. And she would talk about it saying, well, my mother made me when I was, I don't know, 12, 13, which sounded to me like extraordinary child abuse. I was not aware that mothers could make their daughters go to doctors to get, you know, put under general anesthesia and get cut up. But as college went on, I discovered that there was more plastic surgery than I had thought. I had been in this total bubble. Like apparently Asian women were getting eye jobs and people were getting breast reductions. And then of course there were nose jobs. And it began to feel a little more real for me. But the truth is that it didn't really hit home, the full realness of it, till 7 or 8 years ago when I was doing an article about a woman who was very high up at a Jewish online dating service. She was an executive there. And I was sitting next to her and she was talking to me about their algorithms. And we actually were in their system looking at photographs of women. And she was showing me who had been on the site a long time and still not found anybody. And we got to a couple photographs and she said, oh, would you look at them? I mean, if she would just get her nose done, she'd be married within a week. And I was so horrified, and it's like the whole reality came crashing down on me. And it was like after all of this time working in the religious studies media, in the Jewish ethnic media, I was still struggling with the idea that I can't believe people actually do this. But hey, I host a Jewish podcast. It's probably time for me to take my head out of the sand. I am Mark Oppenheimer, and I'm here to host an unorthodox special episode about nose jobs.
So I'll throw out a few technical terms for people so they can come away with just learning a few tidbits.
Everyone sees it immediately, whether they know you or not. Everyone sees your nose all the time.
So to rasp down the bone, you just literally take this instrument called a rasp.
Junos. Some of it was just hook nose, big nose.
Whereas the cartilage, you actually have to use a knife.
In my family, the idea that I was going to have a nose job was so obvious. It was almost the way it is understood that you're going to have a bar mitzvah.
You make that incision across the calumela. And then you pop open the nose, kind of the way you pop open the hood of a car.
Oh, I didn't want to know that, doctor. Stephanie, Liel, and I will be joined today by five different guests giving historical perspectives on nose jobs, giving a doctor's perspective on nose jobs, and giving their own perspectives on the noses that they now have. Liel Leibowitz, my co-host.
Hello.
You grew up in Israel.
Yes.
No
Can
job?
I just tell you?
Yeah.
We may as well be talking about organic chemistry. This is so absolutely foreign. The whole notion of like the Jewish nose and nose job, like alongside, you know, books by Philip Roth and like bagels, these are just things that weren't allowed into the country. Because I think the suspicion
like a
was
customs
that,
thing.
Right. If they let him through customs, we would all become like neurotic. And like frail, no one ever talked about it. It is so strange to me that people here have a thing with noses. I'm so looking forward to this episode to learn.
So your head was even more in the sand than mine.
Was it like the literal sand?
The literal sand.
My head was in the literal sand with my literal
nose. On the beach
in Tel Aviv. I know zero people who had nose jobs growing up. Like absolute zero.
Stephanie Butnick of Great Neck, New York.
Please, Great Neck, Long Island.
Of Great Neck, Long Island, New York. I'm guessing that you had heard of nose jobs at a younger age than Liel Leibowitz did.
You basically come out of the womb and just get your nose done. Just kidding. No. But this is like,
there's a plastics consultant in the delivery room.
Look,
he's also the Moil, to be perfect. It's the same,
like little
utility,
same yeah. Scalpel. Look, I will be very honest. Like, I'm Stephanie. I have a big Jewish nose. Like, and I'm totally, at this point, very okay with
See,
it.
See, can I tell you something? Can we stop here for a moment?
Yeah.
What you're saying right now sounds insane.
Are you
to
mansplaining
me.
Her own nose to her?
I'm looking at her as like, in what world?
Like, you're like,
this
you strong,
so,
Sabra.
No, right. This is so crazy.
I think, no. Like, I think, first of all, I did grow up in a place where, yes, after you're 16, like, sophomore year, you'd come back from spring break, and like you would look, like girls would look a little different. And it was sort of.
Can we break it down for us ignoramuses in this room here? Because Liel and I are in the same boat. Like, what percentage? Let's say you were in a class of 26 kids. Homeroom was 26 kids. 20 of them were Jewish. So 10 Jewish girls. Like, give us, and how many of them had their.
Probably five.
By the way, 10 Jewish girls.
Five Jewish girls
is the greatest Agatha Christie novel.
What is 10 Jewish,
10 Jewish girls?
10 Jewish girls.
And almost Minions. No, but like, it was something that people did. And I think it'll be interesting to talk to Alana, because she's also from Long Island and from a different part of Long Island. I think it wasn't, it wasn't as charged as I think it's been in American history, the idea of getting a nose job. There was not, like, it was just sort of like, oh, you did it. There was like one doctor who did them all, and everyone sort of came back with the same cute nose. I didn't do it. I think mostly because I watched Nip Tuck and I was very squeamish about plastic surgery. But it wasn't like I had an ideological stance for or against. I was just sort of like, I would never.
Is there an age at which when you're 15 and your first couple friends in your scene and your crowd have done it? Did you think about it?
I don't actually know. I mean, look, my sister has like the cutest nose in the entire world.
And it's
just
her
like,
own?
I'm like, where did you come from with this like amazing goyish nose?
Can I
like,
be honest? Yeah. I always figured your sister had a nose job.
No, she has an actually amazing nose. It's insane. And I'm like, you don't look like, where did you come from?
So here's my question. Okay. So everyone goes to the same doctor?
There was the doctor in Great Neck who did the nose jobs, and you also probably could go to the city and get yours done there. But there wasn't that much. It wasn't like a loaded thing. It wasn't like no one made fun of you. It was sort of just like you did it. And so there was a few different times to do it. And Taffy Broadus, our actor, had a piece in the Times a few years ago, but was basically like remembering the noses she didn't get. But like there, it changes with the times. And that's sort of what freaked me out a little bit, because it's like if you get the wrong nose at the wrong time, then you're stuck with a new nose that you might be out of fashion.
I've seen some women in their 60s, I think. They're younger, older than me, younger than my parents, like let's say late 50s, 60, who have noses that are so ridiculously thin. And I think it's like they're wearing a sign over their nose that says, this is a nose job nose. They look ridiculous.
So you could do it. You did it like either junior year. A lot of people did it before they went to college that summer. Uh-huh. I think it boils down to, if this is something that bothers you all the time, then it's something that you can fairly easily fix for a lot of money, but not that much money, not like $50,000. You know what I mean? Like you can fix it. And if you have the means, I don't know. I think it's interesting. I think when I was like in grad school, I was like, oh, look at me. I'm so evolved in my Jewishness. I don't need a nose job. And then I was like, that's bullshit. That means that saying that, like the idea that I think in my head a little bit, I had this like notion that like you're erasing your Jewishness if you got a nose job. But that means that I was buying into the idea that Jewishness is your nose, which
is
so.
I don't know. I mean, I would come down somewhere in the middle and say that undergoing like somewhat violent elective surgery that costs a lot of money to pull yourself in line with an ideal of beauty that is not Jewish, that is, you know, that is specifically un-Jewish. And, you know, Jews aren't the only ones who buy into it, right? By any means, right? African-Americans get their noses done and Asians get their eyes, whatever.
Do they really, by the way?
Oh, yeah.
This is so shocking.
We can talk
to me.
Later about. So I will be honest, I used to lurk on websites like, there used to be one, I think it's kind of dormant now, called celebrityplasticsurgery.com.
And it was when you were looking for Nimrod late at night.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things. I mean,
Weiselfish, by the way, totally had lot of work.
Weiselfish needed no work, let me tell you. I used to lurk on these sites, and you could see, you know, the black women who had their noses done. You could see, you know, people who had their eyes done, who'd had their ears pinned back. And they would have all this expert commentary from Beverly Hills plastic surgeons saying like, well, you can tell in this picture here. I mean, and it was so fascinating. And part of this morbid fascination for me was that I really did discover nose jobs as a thing at the same time I was discovering Judaism as a thing. And it was so astonishing to me that whereas I was coming into thinking of Judaism as this heritage that I didn't know so much about, I was discovering that some people were going to doctors to be cut up to look less. It was so discordant for me.
So do you think it's possible to detach the Judaism from it? Because I think it's like some people, like when I got to college and, you know, met Gentiles, I had a friend who was from Mississippi. She like got her mom made them all get their ears pinned back. Like they got.
Absolutely.
I'm pretty sure she got a nose job. Like, I think it sort of became something that just people did.
So if you had wanted a nose job, your parents would have been like, okay.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, and then it's like everyone's like, oh, do you have a, people have said like, oh, your nose really fits your face. And I'm like, or I've said, yeah. Or someone's like, my mother's like, you have a beautiful nose. I'm like, okay, all right, let's relax here. I think my grandmother has said that to me before. But to me, I'm like, if it's part of my face, like it literally, it would, I can't imagine what my face would look like if I had a different nose. At the same time, yeah, I mean, look, I said this, I actually had a dream the other night. I was, it was the night before, it was while we were prepping for this show, but it was also the night before I was going to see Dr. Prasad for one of my like weekly, biweekly, like, I don't even know what, yes.
Nasal checkups?
Yes.
Hangouts?
He does, he
Netflix and chilling?
Yeah, I'm not going to tell you what he does, but he basically gets a lot of stuff out of my nose. But I had this dream that I was like going into surgery, sort of like I did, you know, about a month ago. And I was going in for a nose job and I sort of was like about, they were sort of like putting me under and I was like, no guys, I don't want to do this. What am I doing? And I just like, I was being wheeled into an emergency room to get a nose job. And I was like, guys, stop it.
Stop.
Too late.
And I woke up and I was like, what is going on?
It is your destiny.
Yeah. I'm like, what is going on in my inner life right now?
Stephanie, back in high school, the five or so girls a year who got one, did it change their lives? Do you remember like, oh, now Thad is going to ask her
to. Well, there was no Thad, so.
Now Ari is going to ask her to the junior informal.
No, I don't think it changed their lives necessarily. They probably just felt a little better. I mean, look, it's hard because high school is such a charged time and it's like they probably did feel better about themselves. I mean, look, I'll be honest, like I am conscious of my nose sometimes. Like if I'm in a very non-Jewish situation and someone's like, what do you do? And I say, I work at a Jewish magazine. I feel like all of a sudden I become like a Der Stürmer like cartoon. And I'm just like, are they looking at my nose? Do they think I'm just like so Jewish?
Do you know the irony of that is, you know who thinks in terms of our noses is fellow Jews, right? Like Gentiles don't walk around reading people's faces.
I know this is all about my own
inner
turmoil.
The same way they don't read our last names. Like if I'm in Nebraska and they hear my name is Oppenheimer, they think German.
It's like, oh,
like, yeah. I mean, the idea of Jews going around, it's like my friend Paul Bass says when, you know, somebody asked to, he started wearing a yarmulke somewhat later in life. And there's a story of someone asking him, you know, does it make people uncomfortable when you know, you're around with the yarmulke? And he says, only fellow Jews.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
Like Gentiles.
See,
are
I'm
like,
always like, why is that guy wearing a yarmulke? Yeah. Well, does he want everyone to know he's Jewish?
Yeah. This is part of my, you know, of my fascination here, because it seems to me to have like absolutely no resonance outside of a very particular neurosis that it is in of itself some sort of like weird replacement of like actual, you know, faith feeling that people are like, well, I can't actually feel that, so I'm going to obsess about my nose.
No, I disagree. I think it's what we do now when they're not actually hunting, like coming after us. Like we are sort of always on the idea of a nose job. I mean, it's to pass in a lot of ways, right? Mm-hmm. And like there's a real like epigenetic reason for
wanting to pass
those urges. And so I don't think we should downplay them. I think... What, you know,
Liel, is the real subtext here? If we
it's
just
not plastic surgery, it's epigenetic surgery.
If we and all made be covered by insurance,
that's right.
Is the real subtext? If we just all made Aliyah, we'd be emotionally healthy
and tan
and 6'5" apparently.
No, you would just have other neuroses.
Okay, we just
and the weapons to deal with them.
Though I admire your angel eyes, there's something. I idolize your nose, your nose. Whoa, 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 your nose. Whoa, whoa, it's got a magic I can't ignore. What can I say? I just adore your nose.
We are lucky to have back with us Wayne Hoffman. He is the executive editor of Tablet. You heard him on the show while I was doing something. What was I doing? I don't remember.
Convalescing.
I was convalescing. He filled in for me, but he's back and he is about to change. He's about to blow our minds and we are starting. We're just changing the narrative right away. And we are talking about guys who have had nose jobs.
We are flipping the script.
We're flipping the script. We're
yeah.
Just, yeah.
Yeah.
Welcome back, Wayne.
Thank you.
So tell us about your personal journey.
You mean my nose personal journey?
Yes.
I feel there's some puns coming up. I don't know what they
like,
are.
This is like Steve Martin's The Jerk. I was born a poor black child in Alabama.
So I had a gigantic nose as a child. Gigantic. Like I could be slapping people sitting across the aisle from me with it. It was just tremendous.
It was bigger than any of the three
it
of
ours.
It
was bigger than the three of yours put together. And then also the one I have now on top of it. It was huge. And I was teased a lot as a child. Some of it was anti-Semitic. Some of it was just general.
No, hold on. We need specifics here.
Junos.
Junos.
Some of it was just hook nose, big nose.
And where was
this? But a
lot
of Junos. This was in suburban Maryland in a public high school.
Did you have a preference among these?
I didn't have a preference between those and just usual Hebe, Kike, and Jew Boy, which I was also called. So,
really?
Yeah,
so you were not in a great neck style.
I was in a fairly Jewish area, but that
didn't stop
you
them.
Know where Jews live, anti-Semites live too. So I got a lot of that growing up. And my brother, who's 7 years older than I am, also had the same huge nose. But when he was a kid, before I remember, he fell and broke his nose. So his nose was not only tremendous, but also off to one side like a Picasso painting. Mm-hmm. He had rhinoplasty. Wasn't specifically to shrink his nose, it was really to straighten it, because it was really, really like off to one side. And the nose he came out of surgery with was great. And when he came out, I said to my parents,
"Who's that handsome devil?
I want that.
When I'm older, I want that too." And now mine wasn't pointing off to the side, but I wanted a regular size nose because I hated my nose. And they agreed that when I was finishing high school that I could do that if I still wanted to, and I very much did. So when I was a senior in high school, it was a bunch of things wrapped up in one. I was starting to come out of the closet.
As a Jew?
No, I'd been out of the closet a long time ago. Starting to come out as a gay man, and also wanting to change everything, because high school was horrible. It was absolutely the pits in every way. And I saw this as a new beginning. And part of that new beginning was changing how I looked. And changing how I looked involved getting rid of my Coke bottle glasses, which were like 3 inches thick and horrible. And I certainly wasn't going to get rid of my glasses when I still had this giant honker. So I viewed this all as one big process. And spring break of my senior year, so we're in the home stretch getting out of high school, I had my nose done, got contact lenses, grew my hair out, and came back to school after spring break for the final month or so of class, I guess. And I walked into my homeroom class where I'd been the entire year, and my homeroom teacher looked at me and said, "Who are you?" And I said, "It's me, Wayne." And she said, "No, it's not." I said, "You have to trust me on this one. It's me." She said, "No, it's not," because I had a certain look and people associated me with a certain look. Horrible, parted
suburban
hair.
Suburban Maryland, where students are anti-Semites and teachers are really dumb.
Really dumb. But she didn't believe me. I looked completely different. I was not what anyone thought I was supposed to be.
Was that kind of confirmation that you had done a good thing?
It was confirmation also that I could sort of draw a line in my life and tell myself, now things start.
By the way, the greatest movie montage ever. Like, yes. I'm so excited.
Right. Yes, and break the glasses. It takes him from the optician to the plastic surgeon's office to the hairdresser.
What was the recovery like?
The swelling took a while to go down, took a few months to go down. But still, my swollen new nose was still puny compared to my gigantic old nose. And the numbness, which I hadn't anticipated, took a year to go away. So really for a year, and by this point I was well into college, I had a nose that if I touched it, I couldn't feel it.
And so do people come to you in high school at that point and be like, "Oh my God, I'm so sorry. You're handsome." Like, is there
this is an immediate affirmation? This is the trauma of my life, is people coming up to me and apologizing because I'm so handsome. It happens all the time. It's awful. Trust me.
Looking at you, I kind of get that vibe.
The people in high school who were my friends already knew what was happening. People in high school who were not my friends, by the end of senior year, we were done antagonizing each other. They were mostly just, they had one foot out the door.
Yeah.
I had 2 feet and both legs out the door.
There were other kids to wedgie.
Yes, they were done. So there wasn't much there. And then when I started college, it really was starting all anew. I never had glasses. I never had a big nose. I never had stupid parted hair. I was always sort of 80s cool.
Be nice to parted hair and glasses.
No.
You basically have described me. No. Like, you're like, "Oh, I got rid of my Jewish nose, parted hair, and glasses."
No, you should have seen, because I have very curly hair. So you can't tell because it's very short. But when I parted my hair, it was a horrible, disastrous, gnarly wave that I had to hold in place with the dry look or whatever. It was just atrocious.
So Aquanet was involved.
I can't go back there.
Did one of your parents have the nose?
My father has a big nose. Mm-hmm. Yes. But my father also has always worn glasses. And so it's part of who he is. And to be frank, coming out as a gay man, I felt I had a different set of standards I needed to live up to if I wanted to, you know, Get some attention and get some action.
Do you feel life would have proceeded differently had you kept your old nose?
Oh, definitely. In terms of self-confidence, definitely. I mean, look, I have other things I need to deal with. the rest of my body that I have not had plastic surgery on is still problematic in like 100 different ways. But at least this is one less thing I have to deal with. And your nose is, there's no hiding it. I can wear a larger shirt or a coat to cover up whatever is happening down in my gut. I can't cover up my nose. I just can't do it. So everyone sees it immediately, whether they know you or not, whether they're talking to you or just looking at you on a subway. Everyone sees your nose all the time. And mine was quite noticeable.
So I'm learning today from my American friends that there is some correlation between noses and Jewishness, which in Israel, total strange thing. So walking out of that office, of the rhinoplasty office, do things change in terms of your own perception of yourself as a member of this group? You're going to college, probably people are more tolerant. Are you less connected, just as connected?
You mean to being Jewish?
Is there a correlation between your nose and your soul?
We should say, like, you were a Jewish summer camper, your brother's a rabbi. I mean,
I work in Jewish media. Yeah. I went to Tufts. It's not like I was going to a Klan rally. No. In terms of my connection to my Jewishness, no, it didn't change a thing. And in terms of how people identify me when they're looking for Jewish community to see if I am Jewish, it's obvious I'm Jewish. I mean, right now I have a big bushy beard and sometimes I wear black glasses. And the woman who at my dry cleaner said, "You look like a rabbi."
Yeah.
You basically, by the way, are our rabbi.
That's right.
Essentially.
That's exactly
so
what you are.
I have never been anything other than extremely Semitic looking, and that's still true. And I think it takes people about a half second to look at me to realize that I'm Jewish, maybe less than a half second. What has changed is there's no immediate casual anti-Semitic insult that people hurl at me without even thinking about it reflexively. I mean, people still hate me because I'm Jewish, but at least they don't just yell at me on the subway because of my nose.
When the anti-Semites are cruising looking for someone to hurl an epithet at, they no longer alight on you.
Third in line, first in line. That's a big change.
They have to think about it for a second. They're like, the beard, the hair, yeah, he's probably Jewish.
Do you think if you grew up somewhere else where you weren't targeted, that this would have still been something you wanted?
I think so. And really, it wasn't anything that I had consciously thought about until my brother had his surgery. And like I said, he didn't do his because he had a big nose. He did it because it was a broken, crooked nose. But it was once I saw his results that it got the gears turning in my brain.
And you realized it was actually possible to change.
I could actually have a completely different life if I had that nose. That would change everything.
So I could imagine someone listening to this saying, "You're a little too casual about this." That you know, we are talking on this show. We're going to be talking with Gail Kirshenbaum, whose mother was nagging her in a way that, you know, basically sets back the feminist movement several decades. "You must get your nose done. You must get your nose done." And I mean, this is a fraught topic. For did your experience of it simply not partake of any of that questions of self-loathing?
And is it because you're a guy?
Yeah, is you seem like you talk about it as if there's not a as if it's not a complicated question for a lot of people.
For me, it was actually very personal, and it wasn't fraught with parental pressure one way or the other. Mm-hmm. Or really pressure from my friends. I mean, my friends also thought, if you want to do it, then do it. There was only one friend who, she was sad to see that nose go, and I was like, if you want it, you can have it. So she had me over for a photo session the day before my nose job so we could preserve that.
So there
image.
Is photographic evidence.
Yes, he needed a wide-angle lens.
Can we put it in the newsletter?
Absolutely not. But I
you
do
have
it.
A courtroom-style illustration.
Wayne Hoffman, what's your do you have parting wisdom for people who might be thinking about it?
And not for your hair.
This is my parting wisdom. There is a lot of sociological and political noise around this kind of thing. But it goes in both directions. Of course, there's pressure on Jews to look less Jewish. I get that. But then there's also pressure in the other direction saying, well, I know you want to do this for yourself, but think of the larger sociological implications. But no, I wanted to do this for myself. I did this for myself, and I haven't regretted it for a minute. And if it's in no way me running from my Judaism, I'm the executive editor of Tablet Magazine.
You did a very poor job.
Yes, if I was trying to run from my Judaism, then working in Jewish media full time for the last 15 years was a really bad decision. So that's not what it was about for me. And it's not like I dyed my hair blonde and got a Barbie Benton miniature nose. I have That's a probably generationally specific thing. Those of you who don't know who she was, Google her.
I think like, of it as
Battle of the Network Stars in the 70s.
So what are you saying? That the ski slope nose is not a slippery slope.
Is
you're saying
right?
You didn't go Lord. Out there be like, I'm just going to get a bunch of other things.
Also, if I can say, my nose is a normal medium-sized nose. I didn't go for the...
It's not obvious.
It's
I've
not
never
a
have
dainty
known.
Nose jobby nose.
Do you
I
see
think.
A catalog? But when you walk into the office, they're like, sort of like, well, which one would you?
Nope.
Or does he just kind of work with
the
you?
The surgeon too? Said his goal, which is why I knew when I saw the results from my brother that I wanted it. He said the goal is to give you a nose that looks like it could have been your nose, not to give you a nose where everyone knows that's too small for your face and that doesn't fit. He said, you're not going to come out of this with a tiny nose. You're going to come out with a nose that looks right. And look, this was 30 years ago, and the number of people who've ever stopped me or ever talked to me, including people I've dated, who ever guessed I had a nose job is a grand total of zero ever.
Yeah.
So I think that's pretty successful.
I've been looking at this thing for like, 14 minutes now. It does not look at all.
It's great.
Yeah. Very good.
Wayne, thank you so much for being here. We will see you back at the office in like about an hour.
Absolutely.
See you and your nose.
Yes, me and my nose. Stop staring at it.
Never. Thanks, Wayne.
Nobody knows all the trouble I've seen. And nobody knows about Jesus. Nobody knows all the trouble I've seen. Glory, hallelujah.
We are honored and a little intimidated. Just kidding. We have with us our boss, Alana Newhouse, the amazing Alana Newhouse, and she is here to like weigh in and to like make sure we're not getting in trouble, but also just to share her own experiences. Alana, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So Alana, we both grew up on Long Island on different sides of the island, but like both the Jewish kind sides.
Right.
So like, will you give us a little bit about where you grew up and the sort of the scene there?
I grew up on the South Shore. Stephanie grew up on the North Shore with the classy Jews.
Look, I'm wearing my juicy sweater again to just prove.
Leal, I'm as lost as you are right now.
Yeah, no.
I have no idea what any of this
means. I'm nodding politely.
Yeah. Okay.
I grew up in the Five Towns in Lawrence. And nose jobs were definitely a cultural thing that was in for certain kinds of women or girls, really we were girls at the time, a cultural rite of passage.
So in your community,
yeah,
when you say it was a rite of passage, like I asked Stephanie this earlier about Great Neck, but what kind of numbers are we talking here?
Like, I have no idea.
Like a majority of girls you know?
No. And again, I want to be specific because the Five Towns actually was a community that had Jews that were Reformed, that were conservative, that were modern Orthodox, and then eventually more right-wing yeshivish community.
Will
that
you tell
emerged.
Us what the Five Towns are? I always forget.
Yes. Lawrence,
and for our
Cedarhurst,
listeners, not from Long Island.
Whitmere, and sure. Inwood. What's really important to understand about the Five Towns is that the Five Towns were a collection of neighborhoods where Jews who were basically part of the first and second and third waves of white flight out of the city moved. A lot of them were in the garment industry. This was a very particular kind of, in some fundamental way, blue-collar Jew. Many of that first generation did not go to college. And they were, by definition, the archetype of the aspirational New York Jew. So for us, the nose job was only one signifier of the Jew becoming American. And doing so inside of being Jewish. I can't explain it. For us, it was never, ever about running away from being Jewish.
So
ever.
Here's my question. So here you are, you're my age-ish, 41, 42?
41.
You went to Barnard. I think of you as a feminist. Mm-hmm. You're one of the smartest people I know.
Thanks.
In my universe, like in Oppenheimer-Kirchner land, the feminist opprobrium toward mm-hmm, this would mm-hmm. have been so overwhelming. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not that it couldn't have happened. It's just that like the hurdle to overcome as something that like second wave feminism existed in part. So we didn't take this for granted. Did you not know that, or you just didn't care, or your mothers did not know that?
Didn't know it. So my mother was older. My mother was in her 40s when she had me. And my mother actually had a nose job. She had a nose job when she was 19. My mother was working in the garment industry, and her boss bought her a nose job.
Wow.
Did she want it, or was he hinting strongly?
No, she wanted it, and she worked the front desk, and he paid for her to have a nose job. So it never struck me as odd or as a divergence from any values to have one, right? Because the values that were represented in the person that I was from, literally, were to have this. So in a funny way, this was me fulfilling my inheritance. I used to regret having had a nose job, particularly in my 20s when my feminism really took root, because I was applying kind of objective principles to my specific life. I got upset that I had done this thing that objectively one shouldn't do. Except that's really not actually how identity or life works. It's supposed to be specific, and it's supposed to be about you and your emotional ties and the ties that run through your family. And these are the ties that run through mine. Now I love the fact that I have a nose job that is the same as my mother's, who got one because some garmento bought it for her.
I mean, it's like a really American
Jewish.
That's amazing.
That is an American Jewish. It literally moves me more than anything else.
It's pretty authentic.
Maybe. Yeah.
How did the consciousness build up that you wanted one?
You know, it was like...
Is it like I'm 14, I'm not old enough yet, next year?
No. It was almost the way in some families it is understood that you're going to have a bar mitzvah, right? It's just in the atmosphere. Everyone does
it.
It's
in the water.
That's what everyone does. In my family, the idea that I was going to have a nose job was so obvious. It was almost never discussed. And what was funny was that was in part why I got upset in my 20s. Because I felt that nobody had ever said to me, do you want to do this? Do you understand what you're doing? And is this a choice that you would like to make as a fully actualized adult with volition? But the answer is, I was 15.
That's right.
I wasn't any of those things.
Yeah, that's right.
So ways, it's appropriate.
I kind of think your parents should have let you do that on your own if you'd wanted to do that at some point.
I'm sure that's correct. But here's the thing, Mark. In the long list of things that my parents maybe should have done, it's the one that I don't feel bad about.
Would they have been upset if you'd said, I don't want this?
First of all, there's a big difference between my father and my mother. My father had no investment in this at all. In some ways, it was one of the million things that my mother does that he just let her do or somehow enabled and went along with. And they had a marriage that worked. That worked for them. Would my mother have been upset if I said that I didn't want it? Maybe she would have. And maybe in a way she would have felt that it was a rejection of her. And in a funny way, if I had done that, it probably would have been. But at 15, I was a really good girl, and I didn't want to reject anything. And it was fine to do it. And I didn't have anything else to do on winter break that year. So.
Hanukkah was early that December.
In the modern Orthodox community, there is no problem with the prohibition about altering the body. That doesn't come into consideration.
There is a complicated answer to that question, which has to do with modern Orthodoxy, which frequently has lots of things that people do that don't jive with halacha. For example, yes, I understand exactly how to read the halacha so that women can wear pants. But for a large number of women in at least in the community I grew up in, it wasn't because the halacha, they figured out how to read the halacha according to Blue Greenberg, and they actually knew how to wear pants because of it. Nor does that really explain away the hot pants, right? So there's lots of things that in the modern Orthodox community where halacha gets skirted, or where where it did in my community where we grew up.
Nobody went to the rabbi. Nobody went to Kenny Hayne and said, Rabbi.
Maybe people did. It is possible, and I would actually bet, certainly as the community became more observant, that more people did go to rabbis about this, and that there may have been lots of people who were talked out of it, specifically for the reason that you brought up, that halachically they couldn't square it.
You can't mutilate your body according to halakha, right?
Right. And so we don't know what happens in private conversations, and I don't know what happened behind the closed doors of people's homes. I know it didn't happen in my house. And also the other thing to understand is that my mother was Sephardic, and we also were members of a conservative Sephardic shul, the Sephardic temple. And in that shul was entirely built by garment industry people. And in that shul, I would say that at least 60% of the women had nose jobs. That they were also older. It's a different generation. It was different, but I would say that it would surprise me if it wasn't a majority.
Nothing terrifies me more than like the nose job surgery that your mother probably had.
Right.
Like, what did they do? I mean, well, we're talking about nose. Like, what did they do?
I don't know.
We don't want to know.
I don't know. And the other thing is, you know, think about it. Could you imagine if I just, like, if your boss just came? I mean, think about it. In today's conversation about.
Yeah, thanks for not ever office. Telling us that we have.
Could you imagine if I came over to
Is
you?
Is that
and
a benefit
of
tablet?
Like, right. It was like,
Mark, Liel, come here for a second.
Everybody gets, like, a choice between Botox and lipo or a nose job for your end of the year bonus. It's bananas to think about. And what's crazy to think about is that her boss paid for it. And paid and saw it as a useful investment in his yes.
So now is now a good time to ask for you to pony up for
for Dr. Prasad's special Christmas bonus.
Alana, thank you for being here and for being so honest and so smart.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Alana.
See you back so much.
This was amazing. Thank
bye.
You.
Nose job.
Now she's the prettiest gal in town.
She got a nose job, she got a nose job. It's now turned up instead of hanging down. She got a nose job, she got a nose job. And now she's the prettiest gal in town.
We're excited to be joined today by Dr. Jonathan Kaplan. He's a plastic surgeon in San Francisco, and he's also the founder of BuildMyBod.com, which is a price transparency platform that allows consumers to check pricing on medical and cosmetic procedures, including the famous rhinoplasty, which we're talking about here today. So first off, Dr. Kaplan, I hear that you're a Louisiana Jew. My grandma was from Lake Charles, so you and I can do business. But first of all, look, we've been talking with a few other guests about nose jobs. They've had them. What we want to hear from you is, what is this thing? Like, could you walk us through it and, you know, maybe tell us what was a nose job 50 years ago and what's a state-of-the-art nose job today?
I will tell you, kind of walk you through it, but in case you're really curious, you can actually watch a lot of doctors perform surgery now, quasi-live on Snapchat and Instagram. So if you check out Real Dr. Bae, that's my handle, R-E-A-L-D-R-B-A-E. If you check it out on Snapchat or Instagram Live, you can watch me, like I did liposuction yesterday. I'm doing a mommy makeover today. But the point being...
Wait, and I assume they signed releases saying,
mother. And this is actually a thing now. Like, it's not just me. I didn't think of it by any means. But it's actually a thing, like, as far as, like, you know, when we're talking about transparency, like, you know, there's no better way to know what's going to happen to you than other than seeing it actually happening.
All right, man.
But so anyway, so watching a rhinoplasty, if you're going to kind of go through it step by step, what we do is if we're just doing something with, like, the hump or the bridge of the nose, just shaving that hump down, you can do what's called a closed rhinoplasty where you just make incisions on the inside of the nostrils. And that's great. You know, you really can't see the incisions at all. If you need to do a little bit more where you're like rasping down or shaving down the bump on the bridge of the nose, or maybe you're refining the tip, then you more likely will have to have an open rhinoplasty where you make an incision across that piece of skin in between your nostrils called the columella. And then you pop open the nose kind of the way you pop open the hood of a car, and you can go in there and then you can actually really see all the structures. And so when you're rasping down the bridge of the nose, it's actually that bump on your nose is a combination of bone on the top half and cartilage on the lower half. So to rasp down the bone, you just literally take this instrument called a rasp that's got sharp edges and it shaves it down. Whereas the cartilage, the rasp doesn't work. So you actually have to use a knife to actually cut away the cartilage to shave down that bone and that cartilage of the bump. And then when it comes to the tip of the nose, that's all made of cartilage. And so you trim off part of the cartilage to really make the, you know, take it from a boxy tip to more of a refined tip. Is that, am I out and too much into the weeds?
No, this is great, but this begs the next question. Do you have, you know, like there are different fonts for texts? Like, do you have like a book with like different nose styles? Are there like references that like you and your colleagues say, oh, you know, she wants a Greco-Roman? How does that work? How do you decide?
No, each doctor has their own style, but as far as like you picking a picture out of a book, we don't have a book where we look at, oh yeah, we'll do it number A2 or A3 or 5B. What we typically do is the patient will bring in a photo of somebody that they are interested in. Of course, there's a lot of things in the news now. Everybody wants to look like Meghan Markle, you know, who's getting married to the prince. And you know, a lot of people wanted to look like Kate before that. So there's a lot.
Wait,
of
really? So there's like, it's that sensitive to current events? It's like Meghan Markle absolutely becomes famous 3 weeks ago and you've already seen her picture in your office.
It's unbelievable. And I'm not saying that's really reasonable, but that is absolutely what's happening.
Are there people who are like, I got the Kate, but now I want the Meghan?
By the way, one mistake could happen. Oh, you wanted the Markle. I got either Angela Merkel. Sorry.
Right.
So who's coming in for these procedures? What's the percentage, as far as you could tell, of different ethnicities and of male versus female?
Right. So it's definitely overwhelming in my practice. I mean, you could talk to another doctor in New York and they give you a different spread. But as far as in my practice, overwhelmingly 95% are women coming in. And they're mostly not, and I know this is obviously a Jewish podcast, but the patients I'm seeing are really not necessarily Jewish. They're more just Mediterranean in general. A lot of Persian women coming in, and they don't like the bump on their nose, or they feel like their tip is too boxy. And so those are the things we're working on. As far as men, the two main things just in general that men are concerned about from a cosmetic perspective is a bump on their nose and their neck. They don't like their neck. It's just a full neck. And whether that's because people are taking more selfies and they're noticing that, you know, I don't know. But men, it's definitely a smaller percentage that are concerned about the bridge of their nose, the bump on their nose.
And how old are these people?
They're pretty much all in the late 20s to early 30s.
So you're not getting like the sweet 16 nose jobs anymore.
No, I am not. And maybe that's some, you know, I'm a plastic surgeon that really does all sorts of cosmetic surgery, all different types of cosmetic surgery in my office. I have an accredited operating room in my office. So we're doing mommy makeovers, breast augmentations, tummy tucks, liposuction, rhinoplasty, eyelids, you know, kind of a little bit of everything. So I think that maybe if you're a doctor that has a specialist that only does rhinoplasty, you're probably seeing more of those sweet 16 noses.
Is there a trend in nose jobs? I'm hearing that there are fewer today than there were 10 or 20 years ago. Is that your experience?
That is definitely true. And whether it's the body positivity movement where people are, you know, like, oh, I'm just happy with my nose the way it is, let's leave it alone. Or it's because there are other techniques that people can get away with that are non-surgical. So that's one thing that we're definitely seeing an increase in, is something we call a liquid nose job. And all of that is just the fillers that you may have heard of, like Bellotera or Restylane or Juvederm, the fillers that people use to fill in the nasolabial grooves, the you know, the parentheses lines around the mouth. Those kinds of fillers that people are using to look younger, you can actually inject those into the nose, and it doesn't dissolve the bump or anything, but what it does is it fills in the space around the bump and helps camouflage that bump. So it can take somebody from having sort of a ski slope nose to having a more straight nose because you've put in filler there, or you've just put in filler around the bump to make it a much smoother transition along the bridge of the nose. So the point being is that by having this non-surgical option, fewer people are having rhinoplasties for that reason as well.
Dr. Kaplan, I went in for sinus surgery about a month ago. And when I was meeting with the surgeon, he's like, okay, we're going to clear out this and then I'm going to fix your deviated septum. And I like almost started laughing. And I said, that's an actual thing. And he's like, yes. And so I did get my I'm breathing amazingly. I can't believe it. But I mean, what is the, can you explain the deviated septum myth, the reverse reality? I mean, is it possible? Do you need a nose job? Like, how did this happen?
So I think it's a really classic thing. And again, I think that maybe there's less of a stigma associated with plastic surgery now. But in the past, you know, people would go in and they would get their nose job. They're really getting a nose job. But at the same time, maybe they had trouble breathing. And so maybe the rhinoplasty part of it was paid for out of pocket because that was cosmetic. But the septoplasty, which is the fixing the deviated septum, that's often covered by insurance. So if the patient was having trouble breathing, the doctor would say, well, we can fix the deviated septum because that's covered by insurance. So people then latched onto the deviated septum that, oh, that's covered by insurance. That's medically necessary. That's what I'll tell everybody I'm having, is I had a deviated septum. And that was the primary impetus for me coming in to get this surgery, not because of the vanity of getting a nose job. So because there's less of a stigma, I think people are more open about getting their nose job. But, you know, there are still people who say they're just getting sinus surgery when, in fact, they're getting a nose job.
I'm proud to be taking back deviated septum. Like, I got a pure,
you
like,
own
my
it.
Yes.
I think that is really the issue with that. Yes, there are people who absolutely get their deviated septum corrected at the same time as a nose job, but they just really highlight that aspect so they look less vain, which they really shouldn't feel that way.
Do you find people who are coming in and saying, I got a nose job when I was younger and I regret it?
No, they don't regret it in the sense that they are unhappy they got a nose job. They might be unhappy with the results of that nose job, but they don't ever, ever, in my experience, want to go back to their original nose. They may want some revisions done on the new nose, but they never want to go back to their original nose. I've actually never heard somebody say that.
Dr. Kaplan, your website is buildmybod.com. Tell us your Snapchat handle again.
Sure. It's Instagram and Snapchat. It's Real Dr. Bae, just like San Francisco Bay Area, but it's R-E-A-L-D-R-B-A-E, not B-A-Y.
And they can watch you do nose jobs on Instagram and Snapchat.
Absolutely. We have a nose job, I believe, next week, but they can watch any operation. So
oh
if they
my
go
God.
On
That's
now,
all I'm going to do today. Yeah, let me tell you.
Very Dr.
You've given us a lot of late night watching. Dr. Kaplan, thank you so much
Appreciate
for joining
it.
Us on Unorthodox.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.
Our next guest is Matthew Bagel, professor emeritus in art history from Rutgers University, the author of many books and articles about American Jews, Jews, art, and history. The absolute most knowledgeable person to help take us through the seminal question of the moment, which is, Professor, where did this thing about Jews and noses begin?
Actually, in the 12th century.
But oh so it wasn't my high school years?
No, historians are very careful to be very precise about these things. I'm less precise because I know it's been written, after the Israelites left Egypt, even centuries later, there was still hostility to Israelites. So this goes back a long way. But in the 12th century, you begin to get Jews in medieval manuscripts wearing pointed hats. They're different from other people. At about the same time, 1150, you begin to get hooked noses. And also at that time, you get, for the first time, at least in images, Jews killing Christian children for the blood, the ritual to make matzah.
So the blood libel and the nose libel were same time?
Roughly the same time, yes, according to the latest historical research.
That is crazy.
And it just goes on from there.
Now, I don't mean to be, you know, too crude here, but there's something obviously very, you know, phallic about the sort of big, prominent, protruding nose. Does this connect to that sort of other anti-Semitic trope of Jews being somehow sexually deviant?
Very much so. It goes in two directions. If you have a big nose, you have a large phallus. If you have a big nose, you might, that's the substitute for not having a big phallus.
So it goes both ways.
Can't win with a goyim. I mean,
you can't win.
That's why bald men always tell you it's because they have so much testosterone, right? They want you to know, right?
Yes. And if you're hairy, you also are hypersexualized.
Right.
So it goes either way. But you can't win if you're Jewish. Either you're hypersexual or you're undersexual. And a lot of it has to do with the nose. And it has to do with the shape of the nostrils, so that even if you get a nose job, because of the construction of your nose and the construction of your nostrils, you're going to sound Jewish regardless. You cannot escape being Jewish.
This is what their sort of pseudoscience said, basically.
I wouldn't say sort of. I would say yes.
Yeah, okay. So you mentioned something really interesting. You said at some point, you know, nose jobs became the kind of weapon against this libel. Now, I get a sense that this, too, doesn't date back to the 1960s or 1950s.
No. It goes back well over 100 years now. So that the first nose job for a Jewish nose job because you're Jewish was in 1896, I think, in Germany by a man named Jacques Joseph, but he was Jacob Joseph. He changed his first name to Jacques.
Jacques and his nose.
Jacques Joseph.
What do we know? What do we know about this first instance? I mean, obviously, it's documented.
There were some nose jobs done before, especially for Irish people to build up the nose because they had pug noses. But this is considered the first rhinoplasty for a Jewish person, both religiously and aesthetically. With the straight nose, the person thought, mostly were women, but there were men also, could pass for Christian. But the pathology was so deep, people could still tell you were Jewish, or those who thought you were Jewish, or those who were simply anti-Semitic.
Now, like every good historian, you come with you know, primary texts.
Yes, okay. What do you have for us here? Okay.
This is a picture of a worker lighting the Hanukkah candles. Since it's Hanukkah, I brought this
very
in.
Very seasonal, yeah.
And he's a tired worker. He's a tailor, and he's lighting the Hanukkah candles. He has a hook nose. This is done by a Jewish cartoonist around the turn of the 20th century for a Yiddish language magazine. But he's a pleasant person. I'm going to show you a picture of a Jew in a German publication in
looks
which the
much less pleasant,
slightly right. different less, the vibe
looks evil.
And they're both clearly
very cannibalistic looking.
They're both clearly Jews, but one of them is the grandpa.
Monstrous.
One right. of them is the grandpa, and one of them's monstrous, right?
Yes.
And yeah, it's like it's even more hooked, and it's pointier, and his beard is pointy. Right. It's devil. He's the
there's
devil.
There's a sharpness.
And he looks like the devil.
He looks like the devil.
Although, again, right. to kind of like play back on the theme, Mark, if you hold up the menorah one again, if you showed it to me without the menorah, just that face, ask me what is this, I'd be like, I don't know, like a Georgian man, you know.
He looks like
a Russian
peasant. He's
I wouldn't have said Jew.
Yeah. He actually looks a lot, if he had a beard, he'd be my grandpa with the cap. Yeah. My grandpa had a little cap like that.
In the research, people from the Mediterranean, Armenians have the same kind of a nose. Romans have noses. But the Jewish nose has a certain curl at the bottom, they say, and that's how they can tell. But a lot of people have had nose jobs who come from the Middle East and from, say, Armenia, around the Caucasus, those areas. And then some of those people believe that's where the Ashkenazic Jews originated, so that's where they got the nose from.
So historically, do you have any sense of how, if at all, have our neuroses evolved? Have we gotten more sophisticated, less?
If I tell you you're Jewish and I'm not going to accept you into my club or my fraternity, this gives you a bad self-image. And one way you can fix that is to straighten out your nose. Maybe that will happen by your grandchildren's time, but not for you. So this gives you a sense of self-hatred. And so a lot of the motivation for this is, if they tell me I'm ugly and pathological and overly shrewd and totally materialistic, I must be. If I keep telling you you're lazy, shiftless, whatnot, well, I'll be. And you're not. You don't have an opportunity to prove that you're not. Then you must be. So and you want to pass or become part of the majority culture. They make you, and I say they, just the generic, you know, Christian
the royal
population,
they, yeah.
make you into the other. You be capital O. You become the other. You become the disenfranchised person. You've been to college. You're intelligent. You can think clearly. You're imaginative, but you're the other. Saul Bellow, in his novel Ravelstein, has a line in there which says, you might think you're American, but you're really not. And that's the point of view that I think just runs right through the millennia.
So you're saying Jacques Joseph, if he were around... Jacques Joseph around Long Island today would have understood absolutely clearly the insecurities and complexities.
Oh, yes. This has been worked out in the reports by psychologists of Viennese Jews that they're pathological, they're nervous... they have anxiety, and that's the Jewish disease. It's not a disease. It's what people tell you you must be. We're not going to accept you unless you look like us, even if you know you're as smart or smarter.
It's interesting because we've been talking, you know, when we started the show, we sort of said nose jobs are to pass to become sort of these sort of ways in which we look more American. It's kind of, it's weirdly validating to hear that there actually is this really dark past.
Right.
Like that it actually comes from something
I don't know.
You're not paranoid. They're actually trying to get you.
Yeah.
All right, let me give you a for instance.
It's much deeper than
Henry
we thought.
Henry James, great American novelist.
Great American novelist.
I can't read him, and I'll tell you why. In his book, The American Scene, published in 1905, he'd lived in England. He came back to this country after many years, went to the Lower East Side. It was no longer his city. He had to share it with the Hebrews who had come.
He did.
And he wrote about when he walked the streets, it's like an aquarium with the fish having big proboscises. Mm-hmm. That's just a fancy word for noses. Mm-hmm. You don't make jokes of living people by saying they are fish in an aquarium with big noses. Then another part of the American Scene, his book is called The American Scene, he said when he's walking Lower East Side, he couldn't help but think of the people in the fire escapes looking like squirrels and monkeys in cages, scurrying about. Now, he's talking about my father and my father's generation, maybe my father. This is totally unacceptable to me. You don't make fun of people that way. You just don't. It means they are other, they're not human, they're less than human. And if you are from the Lower East Side, at that time you're trying to reinvent yourself as an American. There's five people sleeping in one room or something of that sort. You're in another language. And this joker comes by and says, oh, you're just like a squirrel or a monkey.
This is my wife's family. These are the Fremers.
Well, this is my family,
these
too.
These are the Bagels.
Yes, exactly. To me, he's a bum, basically, Henry James. That's how I think of him. You can't talk about me and my people like that. It's that simple.
Professor Bagel, before we let you go, what is your feeling about nose jobs? I mean, do you think that they're problematic because they're playing into these age-old tropes?
I'm delighted to be Jewish. I don't want to be anything else. I don't care how big my nose is. Either you like me for who I am or go screw yourself. It's basic like that.
As we say in Yiddish, inshallah.
Inshallah.
Thank you so much for being with us. And thank you for your props.
His book is The Implacable Urge to Defame Cartoon Jews in the American Press, 1877 to 1935.
These cartoon Jews, thank you very much for being here.
So much.
Amazing.
Thank you. You're just a stereo, stereo, stereo. You're just a stereotype. You're just a stereotype. You're just a stereo, stereo, stereo. You're just a stereotype. We are so excited to be here with Gail Kirshenbaum. She's an Emmy Award-winning filmmaker, television producer, TEDx speaker, and the woman behind the short film My Nose, which was about her mother's ongoing efforts to make her get a nose job. And it actually ended up being a whole big project. And now there's a sort of essentially a sequel, which is called Look at Us Now, Mother. And it's about forgiving her mom for
being horrible.
For trying to.
I'll say it for being just horrible.
And so, Gail, we are so excited to have you with us to talk about the trauma that it seems like was inflicted upon you about your nose from a young age. Will you tell us a little bit about My Nose and about your nose?
Okay, about My Nose? Okay, and then
the
we
movie
can talk
My
about
Nose.
The movie My Nose, yes.
Which is the best 12 minutes I've spent. It's really something.
Well, thank you. So My Nose changed my life. So I grew up at a time and a place on Long Island in a predominantly Jewish neighborhood.
Where?
The Five Towns.
Okay.
Which Five Towns? Because now we're...
Woodmere,
we now,
yeah.
Well, I
Cedarhurst.
Went to Lawrence. I lived in North Woodmere, but I went to Lawrence High School. And as you probably know, that is a very Orthodox neighborhood, but it was not when I grew up. So my elementary school now is a yeshiva.
Wow.
In any event, at the time and the place that I grew up, I am a baby boomer, having a nose job for a woman who might have a little bump, or sometimes you didn't even see one, was a rites of passage. So my mother's campaign to get me to have a nose job started as soon as this bump started to grow.
Which, you were 6, 7?
I mean, it's right.
In the movie, it's like basically when you're done weaning, it's time to send you
exactly
to
right,
a plastic surgeon.
Right. Well, I was a bottle baby.
Okay.
Probably, I don't know, 14, whenever. I don't remember when the bump started to grow. But yeah, so it became a big issue. And it was a topic of conversation constantly. And by the way, I know we're talking about noses, but since we're into the whole Jewish thing, my hair, which I have one would consider Jewish hair, very curly, kind of frizzy hair, she was having professionally straightened starting in elementary school.
Your hair. She took you to the straightener.
Yes. And then she bought this product, which if your baby boomers are listening, they will remember, called Curl Free, which is a do it at home product. So that started before the nose, because the nose grew a little later. So the campaign to get me to have a nose job started when I was a young teenager, and I was a hippie kid who grew up in a not a hippie neighborhood. So she desperately tried to mold me into being what I wasn't. And I fought very hard to keep my imperfect yet original nose, which I did. When I can go on about this campaign. So I'll just lead you to the movie. Because throughout the year, she would come up with something. Hey, you know, we can do two for one. Like my sister-in-law was going to have one. She knew I never wanted to take a dime from them. Because, you know, taking any money from them meant control. And I did not want to be controlled. So she would come up with all these ideas of how it could happen free. Or we can do two for one. And then by the time I hit middle age, she herself had had two facelifts. Her eyes done and her eye makeup tattooed on, but not her nose, by the way, which people do comment.
That's kind of low class. That's kind of trashy.
Or you can say she's a woman ahead of her time. And you know, there's a whole thing about being tattooed and being buried in a Jewish cemetery.
It's not true. You know,
which is not true anymore. And my family owned a funeral home, so I did grow up in that biz.
Wow.
Okay, so now leading to the movie. So by the time I hit middle age, she had worn me down, but I was now a filmmaker. And I said, okay, Mom, I will go to visit three plastic surgeons with you for a consultation as long as I can have a camera crew along with me. And she couldn't care less about a camera crew, you know.
She kind of enjoys it. I mean, exactly. So she likes the attention in the movie.
As all narcissistic people do, right? Mm-hmm.
What would I know about that?
Yeah.
So I'm watching this movie and I'm thinking, this is not good mothering. Like, I don't care if you're mothering by Spock or by Ferber or whatever. In no universe in the past 80 years have people thought that you should be constantly putting down your daughter's looks. What would she say to that?
Like the schnozola.
Yeah. Thinks it's love. Obviously, she thinks it's because I care.
Exactly.
But she doesn't know.
By the way, if I may, I watched it last night immediately after watching the Tonya Harding movie, right?
I saw that too.
Whose mother is exactly this. I'm putting you down because I want to make you
totally
great.
Totally different direction.
Right,
in
exactly
your life.
Right. The heart, yeah. The school of hard knocks.
She really thinks it's okay to constantly be telling you you're not pretty enough.
Well, she
all of feminism passed her
she
by.
She believes. Well, actually, I have to say, if you watch the sequel, which is a feature documentary called "Look at Us Now, Mother,"
decency. Yeah.
There's one of the therapists was all right. Let me just give you the little story because yes, she does think it's okay. But so I make this movie. It goes out into the film festivals, and I'm shocked by the reaction. People would stand online. You know, I'd be on a panel with other filmmakers. It's only a short. I'd get off the stage and there would be this line in front of me. And I knew what they were going to say because they said the same thing. These three things. I love your nose. Don't touch it. I can't stand your mother. How do you talk to her? And I'm just thinking, you have hardly seen anything in this little life. And three is, let me tell you my story, because everyone has a story. And, you know, it didn't have to be about a nose, but it was about some kind of criticism they suffered growing up. And that's when I turned to my mother. Oh, when my nose played in Washington, D.C. at the Jewish Film Festival there, we ended up on the cover of the Washington Post style section. And they did pull this out of the movie. But as you remember, because you guys had just seen it, one of the things my mother has always said about me is that my nose looks like the Indian on the buffalo nickel. I know that coin doesn't exist anymore, but it was quite popular when I was growing up. So they have my profile in front of that profile, the Indian. And the first line into the article is, if you have a mother like Gail Kirshenbaum, you better get yourself into psychoanalysis. Well, Mom reads it and she goes, great. Bad press is better than no press. I'm on the cover of the Washington Post.
Bad press is better than no press.
And so then you decide to make a movie about your mother.
Well, then I turned to her because when I saw the pain that so many people were in, and I realized, you know what? It doesn't matter of somebody's fame or fortune. If they were criticized, if they suffered trauma as a childhood, usually for criticisms, and they haven't forgiven that person, that it hurts us. It doesn't hurt anybody else, but it hurts us when we hang on to that anger and resentment. So I asked my mother if she would be willing to go on camera to resolve our relationship. And she said yes. And I knew she would say yes. And my mother today is very funny. She was a Wicked Witch of the West when I grew up. But today she's the queen of the one-liners. She has no emotional intelligence, but she's all intelligence in other areas. So, yeah, so that led to Look at Us Now, Mother, which that now has totally changed my life. I mean, my nose, the reaction to my nose changed my life, seeing the reaction to the people. And so I've become an accidental therapist. This is why now I teach forgiveness, why the TED Talk came to me, why I keynote, why I coach. All, not that I'm not a creative person, because that's number one, and I'm in a room of very creative people. But, you know, when you put your own story out there and your lessons learned, people, I think, get more value than learning from a person who teaches, you know, from a textbook.
So when you were growing up, your mother was saying, fix your nose, fix your hair. How is Judaism tied up into this? Was this all assimilationism? Like, how was she trying to make your life easier by making you look less Jewish?
Well, she thought, and I love that you just asked that it was, mind you, she's first generation American. So it was all about fitting in. And when you watch the feature film, my mother's maiden name is Abramowitz. She likes to say it's the longest name in the alphabet. It starts with A and ends in Z. And they talk about their cousin who changed his last name to Abbott. You know, he was working in the South. So they dealt with the struggles and the quotas that Jews had back then. So it was about fitting in. Mind you, also, my generation is the first generation that our names were anglicized, that we have middle names. Our parents did not have middle names. So, yes, it was straighten your hair. It was have your nose done. And then I'll add another thing. When I was on the Today Show with my film I made with my dog, Roker did the story. And my mother calls me, and the first thing she says to me is, you sound too Jewish. You need to take elocution classes. Well, Mom, I am Jewish. What's wrong with that?
Mom, you moved us to the five towns on Long Island.
Right. So to respond to that, it was a double message, because here you are. You're supposed to hide. You're supposed to fit in and hide what identifies you as stereotypically a Jew, but you better marry a Jew. Now, guys, if you wait till my age, you can bring home a four-legged, you know, dog, and they'll be fine.
So, Gail, give us some parting wisdom for women, for men who are thinking about getting nose jobs, who are wondering, and who have these sort of conflicting relationships with family, maybe about Jewishness. What is your sign off?
I think you have to close all the voices around you that are telling you what to do, and you have to get in. You have to go inside, and you have to do what you want to do. Not be influenced by other people, because, you know, once you make that decision, it's permanent. You're not going to, you know, you can't go back on that. So I think you need to not be so influenced by what everybody else says and do what makes you feel comfortable. I mean, I know people who had the schnauzes and they were very, you know, it affected their self-esteem. And once they had the nose job, they did feel better. But it depends on who you are.
Gail Kirschbaum, thank you so much. Our listeners should definitely take a look at My Nose and Gail's latest movie, Look at Us Now, Mother. You can find all of those online on Netflix, everywhere you stream great movies.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gail.
Thank you.
Final thoughts, Liel Leibowitz?
You know, this is the most un-me sentiment ever, but I just want to say, you know, to all our Jewish men, women, listeners, you guys are so beautiful. Don't change. Don't do anything. I love you. You're gorgeous.
Stephanie?
I feel like this was insanely informative. Like, I feel like we really, really got to the bottom of things. I want to say that, like, I keep thinking, I'm looking at you in your glasses, like, the Jewish nose is actually very good for holding glasses. I'm not joking. Like, there seems to be a way in which there's utility there. Maybe that's why
we are. Which is good, because we're also bookish,
right?
And weak.
And our eyes, you know, we have weak eyes.
I had a professor in college who, when we were reading Ulysses, at one point, I don't remember if it's Bloom himself or it's someone else being talked about who's described as bald or prematurely bald, or we learn that he's bald and he's not that old. And this professor, who was an old waspy French professor, he was teaching a kind of Western civ class, but his field was with the French novel. And he was a serious wasp. And he looked over at me, and I think I was sitting next to Josh Sivan and some other Jews, and he looked at us and he said, well, clearly what's going on here is this reference to premature baldness is a reference to the character's Judaism. And we looked at him like, what are you talking about? And he said, you know, because Jews go prematurely bald. And I was like, Gentiles are the craziest people in the world. And when I think about nose jobs, I just think it's amazing how much of it we bought into.
Well, we've internalized so much.
For so long, right?
But it is kind of crazy that like the nose job isn't something that just started in the 50s or the 60s. Like, right. Like it is not, it didn't start with Goodbye Columbus. There's actually like this deep, insane history, of course, of persecution and of internalizing of that persecution, which is sort of something we talk about all the time
and
here.
And honestly, if that's not reason enough to reject it, I really don't know what is.
But I think the takeaway, I mean, like, I really like what sort of Wayne said, which was like, This is very universal. It's also very personal. And like, if you want to change something and you can change it and it's easy to change, why not? It's not like you are giving up all your Judaism. I think that we need to untangle these two things.
I agree with that, too.
I agree with that, too. But I also feel like in an ideal world, people just think they look great. And,
yeah, but
and it's,
you're
it,
saying
I would
that
feel
as like a guy. It's very different. Like, I think if
in an ideal world, I'm not judging people who don't think that about who.
Let's focus in that. Let's focus in all you frizzy haired, big nose, beautiful Jews and Jewesses, Mark Oppenheimer.
And also, the older you get, don't you really feel its personality more? I mean, honestly, when I think about attractiveness, there's nothing more unattractive than somebody who's always apologizing for herself and low self-esteem. I mean, that the complex of things that also goes along with, and I'm ugly, is just, it's not attractive at all. So, I don't know.
I just think that, like, as with all things Jewish, it is just wild, like, just super complicated, and nuanced and deep. And we tried to untangle it today, and I think we did a good job.
And to all of our listeners, a Merry Christmas.
A Merry Christmas.
A Freiliche Christmas.
For our Mazel Tovs this week, let's do Mazel Tov's favorite nose edition. What noses, what famous noses do you give a Mazel Tov to?
Guys, I got to shout out the classic. The Barbra Streisand. I mean, that was doing something revolutionary at the time, which was not fixing your nose and trying to be a conventional mainstream success.
Fixing, though. Look at the judgment in fixing. As
no,
if it
I'm,
was...
I'm saying fixing because that's the, I'm using the parlance
right,
of the time.
Of the time, yeah.
And I think that's amazing. And I also want to shout out Lea Michele when she was on Glee.
Yes.
When she was Rachel, I forget what her last name was, and she was this like Streisand-loving Jewish character. And something about her look was so perfect. And you were just like, yeah.
And there was the great episode where she thought about getting a nose job and didn't. Leah Leibowitz?
Omar Sharif.
Is he,
beautiful man.
Beautiful man, beautiful nose.
Huge nose.
Mine is a little bit obscure, though not to theater lovers or sitcom lovers. Zoe Lister-Jones is on a sitcom that Sid and I love. It's called Life in Pieces. It's on CBS. It's a, you know, half-hour sitcom that is just better written than most half-hour sitcoms. It's hilarious. And she plays the one Jewish character. It's basically about a big extended brood, like the kind of family that was on Parenthood, for example. And, you know, there's three kids, and it's the children-in-law and the grandchildren. And then there's the kind of matriarch and patriarch, who are James Brolin and Diane Wiest. And they're a Gentile family. But one of the sons, actually Colin Hanks, Tom Hanks' son, plays a son who is married a Jewish woman. And at one point she talks about her Hasidic grandfather. Like, it's clear that she's the Jew. And she's also the only person with a slightly Jewish nose. And it's this beautiful nose, and it just has this little bump that 20 or 30 years ago, the first thing her new agent would have said is, oh, you know, get that little tiny bump taken out of your nose. And I don't think anyone notices it unless they look for cultural signifiers.
Unless
because
it's us.
Unless it's us, because you work in the Jewish press. And I was like, oh, they found a Jewish woman to play the Jewish character. And I mean, she's stunning, and the show's amazing. And
no, she's amazing. She wrote and produced Band-Aid with Adam Pally, who's another great Jewish actor, who plays two short-lived show, Happy Endings, plays this like amazing gay Jewish character for whom his gayness or Judaism is not relevant at all to his character. It's like this amazing thing.
And we are off to the races, people. We could just do Jewish.
We could do Jewish geography all day. But
all
no,
day
I think, yeah, no, and she's beautiful. And I think that you're right that there is something very nice and very cool about that. So brave of her to show that real nose on TV.
You go, Zoe. Unorthodox is brought to you by Tablet Magazine, on the web at tabletmag.com. Write to us at unorthodox@tabletmag.com. Follow Stephanie on Instagram at sbutnick. Join our Facebook group. Call us and leave a letter, a voicemail letter at 914-570-4869. That's Israel Woodstock. Our show is produced by Alyssa Goldstein and Shira Talushkin with help from Julia Frakes. Our artwork is by Esther Werdiger. Our show is edited by Noah Levinson. Our music is by Golem, online at golemrocks.com. Rabbinic supervision this week by Rabbi Sharon Cohen Anisfeld, who not only married me and Sid, but was just promoted to be president of Hebrew College in Boston. So mazel tov to her. We recorded Argo Studios, which proudly retains its original nose. We're proud to be part of the Panoply Network. Shalom, friends.